Wait, does it record the video too, or is it just an audio? What are we doing here?
Lord have mercy, I already started recording. Look. The video is also recorded, but I do not play the video for anybody. The video just stays in my archives. Often I delete the video and I only keep the audio portion of it. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Often means sometimes you, which
sometimes
one?
Sometimes I keep
kept
it for incriminating circumstances. Yes. Okay.
That's what I thought.
All right. All right. Here we go. As my guest so passionately discussed on my last episode, the current worldwide protest sparked by the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer has led to what many hope is a new movement towards equality. This movement has been led by the Black Lives Matter movement. Similarly, as many of you may know and may have seen on the social media, the gay rights movement in this country and around the world was sparked by police brutality that led to 6 days of riots and protests. This incident occurred in New York City and began on June 28, 1969, and became known as the Stonewall Uprising. Gay activists held a parade in New York a year later to mark the anniversary of that event, and since then, June has become Pride Month. I've invited on several of my LGBTQI friends to help me discuss Pride and to learn more about it. I consider myself an ally, but only because these people have, you know, helped me to learn as much as possible about what it's like to live in their community and be a part of their community. And I'm hoping that this gives us all an opportunity to learn a little bit more about, you know, what Pride means and how we can be a support to one another through all of what needs to happen and the changes that need to occur for our country to truly be a place of equality. So to that end, I've invited on four of my very close friends, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves and tell you about a little bit about themselves. So Kyle, if you will start for us.
So I am Kyle, and my pronouns are they, them. I am entering my second year as a health psychology PhD student at VCU. My research interests have a great deal to do with health disparities as they relate to social identities. So yeah.
Okay. Cherie.
My name's Cherie. Pronouns are she/her. Craig and I met at my old job. What I do now, just fuck around mostly. Nothing too important.
That's completely untrue. You have a lot of interest and a lot of irons in the fire in terms of your activism, which is really cool. Julie?
Yeah, unpaid work is still important work. too much of the important work is unpaid. Yeah, I'm Julie. My pronouns are she, her. I am a social worker. Super officially now, because I just finished the MSW program. I met Craig through a wonderful internship where I had the pleasure of being his supervisee, I guess, his intern.
All right. Thank you. Jason, you have to unmute, sir.
I figured that out. First of all, before I introduce myself, I'd like to say, I don't believe any of what Julie just said. That was spread real thick. So I've known Craig since freshman year of college very closely. We've lived together. We've hung out together in many situations. And I don't believe anything she just said. I don't believe it. She just don't believe it. My name is Jason, and my pronouns are him, he, him. I don't know what else to say. I'm a teacher, and I've been out, I guess, for, 15, 20 years. Other than that, I I've just known Craig for a very long time, so way longer than I like to admit.
Yes, yes. I think we've officially known each other longer than we have not. So, which is kind of crazy, right?
That's scary.
Isn't it?
I'm pretty sure I just turned 25 last week, so.
For the, what time? All right.
That's fair. You love that.
So, to get started, I wanted to ask a question that's kind of cliche, but I wanted to ask it anyway. For you all, and you can go in any order you want. We don't have to stick with the same order. What does pride mean to you? And has that meaning changed over the years for you as you've gotten older?
So what was the question again?
What does pride mean to you? And okay. Has it changed over the years for you?
I don't know that it's changed over the years. To be honest, pride for me was more of a coming together of community. Just because growing up in rural Southwest Virginia, there was not a lot of like community. And being a part of that, sort of being a part of the gay community, there wasn't like, there wasn't any club meeting or, gay agenda group that was secretly meeting, plotting the overthrow of society. And so Pride was just a chance to get out and see what the gay community actually looked like outside of my own like limited circle. I guess now that I've gotten a lot older, Pride still basically is the same. But now it's something more that I share with my son. And I experience it more through him than through my own perception. Like I experienced it more through his like first time experiencing it and his view of things more so than myself, my own. It sort of moved generationally, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Whoever else wants to step up.
I think, go ahead, Julie.
Kyle was ready. I saw that. It is Kyle's turn.
I think for me, my relationship with pride has certainly changed over the years. I honestly probably didn't really, I am 35, and I didn't really start celebrating participating in pride sort of things until I would say maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I think that, well, I guess I would also kind of say that like I didn't participate in pride in a very visible way until 4 or 5 years ago. I just think that even like still now I very much so value my privacy and my own relationship to gender identity and sexuality. But I think that the parts of me that like have really grown, since I was 19 or 20, I think I really participate and really adore pride in a different way at this part of my life because I feel like it's important to be visible in some ways, maybe to sort of support and advocate for other folks in the LGBTQ plus community. And I think when I sort of engage in pride or engage with my own pride, I sort of do it in a way that kind of like honors and stands in solidarity with folks who don't feel safe to be visible and don't find liberation in being out because it can be complicated for each individual. But definitely, like, I think at this stage in my life, it is really special to me just in terms of some of the community pieces. And so just really finding a place within that community amidst intersecting identities. So
I feel like I should have gone first now because I don't want to follow that. So I'm kind of mad. I do think that, though, like, for me, what pride is has definitely changed, because I think when I was younger, like, I was out to a lot of people when I was in high school, but, like, not to everyone. And then more people in undergrad, like, my immediate family, and, like, kind of slowly through your life. Like, you have to come out a million times, right? Like, you're never really done coming out, because every time you meet someone new, every time you enter a new workplace, like, it's always. But I think when I was younger, I definitely thought of pride as, like, more that community element and that celebratory element. And I honestly didn't know when I was younger, like, really how it started. And I think starting to understand that, you sort of recognize, like, pride as this way to honor and continue that kind of revolution that you needed to get it started, and recognize how much farther we still have to go. Yeah.
That's you.
I'm going to put myself back on mute now.
That was beautiful. I don't have a lot of strong feelings about pride. That's not like gay pride events are not something that I have that much of an emotional attachment to. I do think it's really lovely, like, the two times I've gone, like, the things that I loved about it was, like, how supportive of a space it could be for queer youth, and, like, kind of the role that, like, older folks can play in, like, both showing people what's possible and also just saying that they're loved. Like, I think that's beautiful and lovely. I wasn't, like, when I went, it was, like, what, 23 probably the first time I went to Pride, and I wasn't going to be on either side of that equation, you know? I was just, like, my own mess, like, of a person, so I didn't have, like, something to offer younger people or something to get from older people. But I do think that that's really important, and in, like, smaller cities and or small towns in Virginia and the South that, like, have Pride events or festivals or just spaces where even if you're not there, you don't go or you don't feel safe going, knowing that that's happening and having people that are in the community or allies just, like, be really loud and visible and saying, like, that they're there, I think that's beautiful and super, super important. I think I also had, like, probably just, like, the same time I learned about Pride, I learned about, like, cops marching in Pride and, like, Pride being sponsored by Budweiser or, like, stupid shit like that, and was like, I hate this. I don't even know these gay people. Like, I'm all the way over here. I'm, like, way more of a leftist than I am of a queer person, apparently. And so I just didn't, like, feel that, like, yes, Pride, you know? I just kind of was like, I don't know what those people are doing. But I do think in real life, it's much more complicated than that. A lot of really positive things do happen because Pride events happen.
Can you guys speak a little bit around, so I don't have the experience of, unless I'm talking to somebody on the phone and then they invite me in and I come in and they're like, oh, you're Black. I don't have to worry about coming out. You see me, you know me. You know what I am. Can you guys speak a little bit about that experience, not necessarily telling your story about coming out, but just the experience of, like Julie was talking about, constantly having to come out. Like, what does that feel like? Like, what is that experience like for you all, just for people who don't know?
It's exhausting. Like, after a while, you just get to the point where you're like, not again. Like, I've gotten to the point in my life where I'm just kind of like, early on when I was younger, it was always a fear, especially coming, being young, a young gay man in the time period that I was out at first coming out and everything. It was still pretty dangerous to be gay. And so originally the coming out piece was, I was hesitant to come out to people and things due to safety concerns. You know, will this come back on me? How will this affect me? Will this affect my job? Like, you know, how will this impact things? At this point in my age and life, it's more like, do I have to go through, like, do I have to go through all of this again? And so, I don't know. It does get annoying after a while to have to come out over and over again. I mean, it's nice. People are usually very supportive of it. But even that gets tiresome after a bit, like, where they're just kind of, like, falling over themselves to try to be like, oh, we're so supportive. I'm glad you came out and all that. And you're just like, I just want to live my life, you know? Like, I don't want to have to, like, I don't want to have to go through all of this every time I, like, move somewhere or get a new job or meet new people or whatever. It always seems to be just lurking on the edge of everything.
Yeah. So can I just say, like, just in a small relatable piece to that, the last few weeks have been so weird. Like, there's been so many white people who have been so friendly to me. It's just like, hi, how are you? Can we just get a head nod? I just need a head nod. I don't need you to smile and wave and give me like the little puppy dog. Hey, how are you? Hey, you're so, hi, how are you doing? You know, it's like, I don't need all that. Just give me a head nod. Hey, how you doing? Good. Yeah, we good. That's all. Move on with your life. But I'm sorry. That was an aside. But it's just,
no, that's why I've tried to be rude to everyone equally this past couple of weeks. Like, I've tried to be dismissive and aloof to everyone. So
just for that balance, Craig, I feel like having all of us muted when you said that was a mistake, because there was a lot of good laughter happening.
Yeah, I lost it. I'm so sorry.
I'm just saying, it's something else. Anywho, I didn't mean to steal any type of thunder from that. Continue on. The coming out process, the multiple coming out process. How is that going to feel?
Well, I think like some, it is a little bit, it's like a weird thing, because I think some people in the queer community don't have to come out to people. Like, some people are visibly non-normatively gendered or don't really have that to negotiate. And I think like people who do feel that like burden of coming out constantly, but I think those who are visibly queer people can, or legibly queer to straight people, you know, that also brings its own piece of hostility, or like not having the option of not being apparently who you are and being potentially like threatened by violence for that. I don't like remember really ever coming out to anyone, but I don't like cast myself in that category of like gender nonconforming either. But I don't know. I don't remember the last time I came out to somebody, maybe my dad when I was 19. I feel like it's just like there. I don't know.
Gotcha. Julie? You're already unmuted,
so go ahead. Calling on me. Oh, I left it? Yeah. I did. I want you to be able to hear when you're being funny. Everybody needs validation. I think I am certainly in the category of a lot of the time having to actively decide to come out as a cis person, and as, you know, I consider myself bisexual, and I think that's like a, you know, sorry, I'm trying to do math in my head right now. I'm like 16 years ago, 17 years ago. I don't know. Whenever I first started like really actively considering myself, I think if I had done that process now, I probably would have just said pansexual. But really bisexual is like an umbrella term, right? Like it encompasses that. Basically all I'm saying is like, I just don't care. I think, you know, human beings are human beings. You can be attracted to different things about them. Saying a lot of words right now. Point is, I'm in a relationship with a cis man. And if you see us on the street, you don't assume that either of us are not straight people. So that's a choice that I have to make. If I'm going to, you know, encounter someone, I'm going to have to tell you that I'm not straight. If that's like, seems like something that you need to know. And so I feel like it is that weird, you know, like I think I must have come out to you at some point, and I don't remember doing it. There are some times where it is like you have that beforehand situation of like, what's going to happen? Is this safe to do? Am I going to be still like welcomed in this whatever environment, you know, this work environment or this friend group or this classroom. Other times it's like you already know. And so like I've certainly outed myself accidentally in the right groups of people. Because you don't, it's like, why would you think about it? You just say a thing and then suddenly everyone knows. And usually in a group like that, there's like almost no reaction, if any reaction, because it's that right group. So yeah, it's like not a big deal. So there's both parts of that where it can be like really, really scary and it can be all like nothing at all. Yeah. And certainly both of those reactions of like, I've been told I shouldn't have come out. I've been, you know, I've had people say messed up things to me in response. And I've also had people be like, I think that's so great. And I know a gay person, and you know, and it's just like, oh my God, you know, what you were talking about of like, yeah, that's plenty. I'm good.
Right. A head nod's good, right? Just, hey, oh, awesome, cool. And move on with your life. Like, seriously, it's good. Kyle.
yeah, I think what everyone is sharing, like, it really resonates with me. Just, you know, so in terms of like the negotiating, if it's safe, you know, the exhaustion of it all. And yeah, like I think for sure something that I'm constantly like dancing with is just, yeah, like the concept of like erasure, like, or you know, that like people don't even consider that someone could have a gender identity that is like not male or female, you know, that someone could not be straight, you know, it's still like a interesting concept for me to think about, that that people wouldn't even consider that it's possible that people be, you know, in their midst that are like not binary in terms of gender or sexuality. And I think also, like, I'll say that I think that something that I'm constantly dancing with is just, you know, my intersections around like race and gender identity. And so you know, so again, like that negotiation of like you know, people are gonna read us how they're gonna read us. And so sometimes really like making that tough choice to find it comical how people read you, or to sort of be vulnerable and to say, actually, it's not sir, it's not ma'am, it's just Kyle, it's, you know, it's they, them, right. And to have to kind of grapple with people's responses of that. And yeah, like everyone else, you know, has shared, like I've had some really sometimes genuine, sometimes not so genuine affirmations and sometimes, you know, some spaces where I was really brave and felt pretty unsafe for saying, yeah, my pronouns are they, them, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think like, I think for me it also depends on where I am, you know, that's also like a part of like that negotiation, you know, dance is like, you know, what does it feel like to be like, you know, a PhD student, and to like how faculty, like there's already like these power dynamics. And so, you know, It is extremely exhausting to sort of do that advocacy work while also like needing to be in a way where like, you know, be in a position where you're allowing people to like teach you. And also like, I think having sometimes having that burden of like having to educate folks about who you are. And certainly, like, that is the case racially, too. And so that can be pretty burdensome. And so, but I think for the most part, like, I just want to be seen as, like, a human being and, like, mm-hmm. as a student and, like, as a kind person and, like, that none of this other stuff would matter. But the fact is that because people make assumptions and they read us how they read us, it's like almost like, you know, you just have to be of service to educate.
Yes. And I think, you know, I think that's an important point, that the idea about advocacy, as well as I had a conversation with my supervisor, and I think I had a similar conversation with Julie over the last year about, when do you choose to get on your soapbox and talk about what's going on? Like, in the mental health field, in the therapy room, like, most of the time I'm just listening. I have to listen and I have to, like, just take in reflective listening, all those things. But sometimes you do have to stop and you have to get on your soapbox and say, all right, look, I need to teach you something right now, because you have a perception of the world that's going to get you in trouble, right? And so, or there's just something that you need to know differently. You know, I had a young man ask me the other day, and he was looking at something on his computer as we were talking through telehealth, and he's just like, what is this Juneteenth thing, right? And it's like, but when I thought about it, I went ahead and I explained it to him, but when I thought about it, it was similar to my experience with the Stonewall thing, right? So, because I think Jason had mentioned it to me several years ago. He had mentioned Stonewall to me, and I let it just kind of go right by me. I didn't do any research on it. I didn't think about it. I just said, okay, whatever, you know. And, you know, that is in and of itself, you know, we're talking a lot about white privilege, but there's a privilege in being straight, right? There's a privilege in being male. There's all these privileges that exist for us. And so I think we all have to recognize what those privileges are and how we utilize them at different points. So being able to kind of dismiss, you know, my gay friend talking about the importance of this event in his, you know, sphere, that's a privilege that I should not have taken, but I did in the moment. You know, later I went back and I tried to rectify that and tried to do the research on it. But in the moment, it was a privilege that I could take, right? And so we have to figure out, how do we advocate, as well as understand what we have in front of us, and how we can then move on to support those around us. So yeah, that's just kind of my little soapbox. Does somebody have something to say? No? Okay.
Can we just touch for a second on, go back for just a moment there where you admitted that you ignored me?
Yes.
Can we just touch on that for a second?
Okay.
And how are we going to rectify that in my life, that you ignored me? Just want to talk about that for a minute. Maybe that's something to be talked about later.
I think we should all be involved in that conversation.
Okay. Accountability.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So.
I think, like, the kind of conversation, or maybe comparison, I don't know, of, like, Stonewall and Juneteenth, or just, like, how we see, I don't know, like, the historical events that people kind of hold up or feel close to their identity. I do think mm-hmm. it's important to say, like, Stonewall was, like, led by Black and Brown people and by gender nonconforming people, and so those are not separate histories. And I right. think if you, mm-hmm. like, see that as, like, you know, white gender nonconforming people, but also mainly Black and Brown gender nonconforming people, like, fighting against police brutality at that time to now, that, like, that is the same, it is, like, literally the same struggle, and that, like, mm-hmm. we will not see Black liberation that, like, does not have trans people and gender nonconforming people at the forefront. That, like, it's, like, not optional to, like, see those things as separate. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's, like, a very weird thing that can happen with, like, white and non-Black, like, queer people, that they, like, want to see these things as equivalent, and it's really, like, no, like, the true thing is that this has been impacting Black and Brown, queer and gender nonconforming people this whole time. And, like, that is like, we have to start there and see that as like the root of this change, and also as the people who have like always been the ones to put their foot down and take the most risk because they had to, and fighting against systems of oppression.
I think like to add to that, like I would also say that, you know, I've heard people have said to me quite a few times, you know, from Black and Brown communities that LGBTQ plus issues are not to be conflated with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think I just couldn't disagree with that more. You know, like we all have intersecting identities that are important to like who we are. And, you know, in terms of just like being at the forefront of movements, you know, like I think also when you navigate, you know, one part of your identity, and you're used to doing that constantly. So if you are constantly navigating what it is to be Black or Brown, that certainly serves as a resilience factor, could serve as a resilience factor in like LGBTQ issues, you know? And so like, it's not a surprise to me that Black and Brown gender nonconforming. Ooh. Somebody is not happy.
I think that was a bark of support.
Yeah.
You're saying good things right now.
I think like it doesn't surprise me, you know, that you know, Black gender nonconforming folks were at the forefront of, you know, the LGBTQ rights movement, just because of navigation through another identity that is oppressed. I think it's really important to consider like all the parts of us in all of this, and like there's no movement that's separate from another. And I think if we continue to like see all of these things as separate, like we're never going to get anywhere, ever.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant point, Kyle and Cherie. You guys are you're completely right in terms of, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to do this, is because, like you said, I don't think we can get anywhere unless we are all kind of pushing in the same direction. You know, if we're all trying to push for our own things at different angles and different, we're all going to like end up in the same place or falling backwards. And so I think it's important that we all are kind of, you know, trying to push together as best we can, you know. And I know, you know, just in my own community, the idea that, you know, the oppression that, you know, gay men and, you know, had in my own community growing up, you know, I think the last time somebody told me they thought I was gay was probably about 5 years ago, but it happened throughout my life, you know, just because I was, you know, not the typical macho man, you know, macho dude. I wasn't, you know, a thug or whatever growing up. And so I've been, you know, told that throughout the years, aren't you gay? No, I'm not gay. But if I was, does it matter? Right. But that even being told that, you know, it makes you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm other, like they're othering me anyway. And so the thought that so many people are othered in that way, you know, it can be a little devastating, you know, and thinking about it, like you were saying, that idea, Kyle, that you were saying, that idea that people can't see that there's grays in the world, right? Everything either has to be black or white, but not, there's grays in the world, and they exist for a reason, because we have to learn from that. You have to learn that there are differences, because you have to learn the importance of differences. But that's just, again, my two cents. My next question actually goes back to something that Cherie had asked or had mentioned earlier when she was talking about Pride, about Budweiser and all these things like that. A lot of othered communities, Black, Brown, you know, whatever, have been commercial, like their cultures have been commercialized in some way and taken and used in some way to, you know, sell product, right? And a similar thing has, you know, started happening with Pride. And I was just curious about your take on that. And when you see, you know, the rainbows that Target is doing or Budweiser or whoever, like, how do you feel about those things? Are they a good thing? Are they frustrating? Are they just kind of like whatever? What do you guys think about that?
I feel like you know what I think about that.
Well, I don't matter right now, Julie. Share with everyone else.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I feel like for me, it's like, all right, make a concrete action, you know, like verbalize the real steps that you're taking if you feel like this is important to you, because you can slap a rainbow on anything, especially if you're going to sell it.
Right.
So please don't ask for my money and then not respect me as a person. You know, it just feels so performative. It's too easy, and especially too easy now. You know, there have been enough years of people saying that's not enough. There's no excuse at this point to be like, well, I'm sorry, I'm still learning. No, as a company, you should have people within that company who are there to say that's not enough and it's not okay. So if you don't have that, there's no excuse for it at this point. I feel like it's just silly. A caveat to that is that I do feel like one of the great things about Pride, like in terms of events, is that young people can feel really supported. And for a lot of people, depending on where they live or who their family is or what their community is like, maybe that's the only place where they feel supported and safe. And so I'm sure for some people it is comforting in that way, but I just feel like it would be a lot more meaningful if it were backed up with action. And so often it's not. So it just gets kind of exhausting. Like, are we supposed to say thank you?
Right.
No, thank you.
Anybody, go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I think, yep. I think that, you know, it's twofold. You know, it depends on how it's being done. You know, I think that representation is important. And so, like, you know, when corporations, you know, make the folks who are in the LGBTQ community visible, so that, you know, youth can see them, and sort of, like, again, like as someone else said earlier, see what's possible, I think that that's great if it's coming from a sincere place. And so, like, an example of that is right now, Dominion Energy's building is lit up in rainbow. And I do know that they have an equality group, you know, they have like an employee equality group where they're like having important conversations all the time. Around inclusion and diversity, and so I would say that, like, you know, if companies are really doing the work, and really are supporting their employees in a way that makes them feel safe at work, or where they're addressing like the social concerns that people who are LGBTQ have, then like great. But otherwise, I think it's pretty problematic for corporations to really like market certain things to LGBTQ folks, you know, to really like alcoholic beverage companies are like so prevalent when it comes to anything Pride, and like, you know, so not also taking into consideration, like, when people are depressed and have anxiety and, you know, are suicidal because of the things that they face, because of their identities, like, then there's some abuse of those beverages. And so like, I think for me, I have a problem with that. And I also think that sometimes the amount of branding, the huge sort of stake in the rainbow, it can be, you know, it's
it is so beautiful. And then in terms of unity and unifying, but it can also be really problematic for folks who have no interest in like wearing a rainbow, or who are too afraid to do that. So I think, there's some different flips to that coin. So.
And I hadn't considered that point about, the alcoholic beverages and alongside of the mental health issues that may come along with having to try to figure out your identity, and being oppressed in that. So that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that. Go ahead, Sheree.
Obviously, I had something to say about Dominion. I just think, in a world in which we're free, there's no Dominion energy. They, own our whole government. So things like that, I'm like, no, fuck it. They think that there's nothing they can do that will make me more free. I mean, they can pay living wages, and they cannot fire people who unfortunately have to work for them for being queer, but, they can also choke, and I don't want anyone to think that they're safe or good for people just because they have LGBT inclusion.
But how do you really feel? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, tell us the truth.
I feel like your message was very mixed. I didn't quite get whether
you're
pro or against, but
fuck capitalism.
Okay. Got it. Well, Craig, I've always had an issue with what I call the will and gracing of the gay community, where we're made palatable by watering down. Sure, Will and Grace was a great. It was funny. I watched it. It was good in one end that it put, gay people on the forefront there. But what was the message it was actually sending about gays? That we were sort of the comical sidekick to straight women and all this other stuff. And so I've always had that issue with what I think is what I call the will and grace thing of the gay community. And that's where all this sort of pride commercialism is kind of gone. I feel like if you're doing something, if a company is doing something for pride and they're then giving back those proceeds to something, anything that's, pride related, the gay community or the LGBT community, whatever, I feel like that's okay. I don't mind supporting that. I don't mind being a part of that as long as it's for something that has an altruistic end to it. But those companies that are just throwing a rainbow on things or some one of the other flags on the things just to be like, oh, hey, we're inclusive. I kind of have an issue with that. Every year Adidas and Nike put out their gay collection. And every year I go out and look at it because one year there was some really sweet Adidas's and I really liked them. And they just were like a rainbow paint splash on the shoe and it was very cool. But it didn't really and part of the money was given back to the LGBT community. And so I bought a pair. So this year, Nike's gay shoe or pride shoe is just a white shoe with a very, very, very tiny rainbow flag on the bottom part of the shoe, on the sole of the shoe somehow. And then underneath the pride flag is a Nike check. And then I'm like, okay, well, Nike, at this point, what are you trying to it feels like you're mostly just trying to say, hey, look, here's a gay flag we've slapped on over top of our logo,
right?
Buy our product because it's pride. And I kind of feel the same way about some other companies. Okay, sure, Target tries to be come off that they're inclusive, and sure, they probably do a better job than a lot of places, but why is it you can only get, LGBT clothing during the month of June for that short time that it's available?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I want to wear a shirt that has something to do with the gay community in December. why does it have to just be in June for a couple of weeks? It kind of goes back to that, and how companies have now started. Every commercial you see now has gay dad in it. Some has two gay dads in it somewhere. there's always two guys that don't, It doesn't come off. It doesn't say they're gay or anything. You just see two smiling, laughing dads walking with some children, or like men walking with some children that don't look anything like them. And so you're like, okay, I assume those are gay dads, but why are they being shoehorned into this commercial? Like, if it's in there and it feels natural, that's one thing. But a lot of times it's just thrown in just to be, just so they can feel like they're covering their bases.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel like the commercialing of Pride has come. It's not that they are really there for the support of the LGBT community. It's more that they're just there to cover their bases.
True common denominator in your friend group.
Yes, nerds unite. So anyway, so there's shows like She-Ra, right? You know, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched it, you suck. You should watch it. Anyway, there's a big gay reveal at the end, right? Which everybody knew from like episode 3 that was going to happen. You have, you know, shows like Supergirl where her sister's gay, and you have Batwoman where the lead character is gay or a lesbian. But as Jason and I have talked about in the past, there's not many shows, and maybe there's some that I haven't seen, where there's a gay male lead, right? And even when they are, like you were saying, it's often very will and grace, I guess is a good term for it. Everybody's buttoned up, you know, very clean, cut, very, you know, like, oh, yeah, I could be your friend even though you're gay, essentially, right? It's like that becomes this whole other thing there where it's not even, where it becomes like, I don't even know how to explain it, but what do you guys think about, you know, the LGBT community and how it's portrayed in the media? What do you want to see more of? What do you want to see less of? Like you were saying, the shoehorning in the commercials and those things. What does that look? What does that feel like for you when you see it? Is it frustrating? Is it, you know, validating? What do you feel like when you see that? When you see those things?
Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I love being talked over by men.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, you're so nice. Zoom is really awkward and I get nervous. What was the question? How do you feel? Oh, you said validating and I was immediately like, ugh. I don't know that there's been one time that I've seen a representation of a bisexual person on screen where I've been like, that's validating. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think it's what you said. It's like, either it's kind of an offhand, usually it's like an afterthought, it's like, oh, and guess what, they were gay the whole time, or that's the entirety of that character and there's so little other like dimension to that person, it just so feels like a secondary like insertion. I don't know, right now I'm specifically thinking about my many disappointments or many moments of disappointment with The Rise of Skywalker. We don't have to talk about that at all, but just really quickly, someone had mentioned to me and then I looked at and like started reading and they were like, yeah, it's like the first gay character in Star Wars. It's like so exciting. And I was like, holy shit, is it now? And it's not, it's so bad. It's just like a totally like post out, you know, of all the like ridiculous, clearly edited scenes in that movie, they really just briefly show two people kissing at the end of the movie, who like one of them has no speaking lines in it. It's just stupid. It makes me so mad. And I feel like so often that's what happens. And then it's like, if there is any more to the character than that, then it's like hypersexualized, or it's just, it's all about their sexuality, or it's all about their gender identity, and like that's all we get to know, and so you don't really meet real people, and how is that validating? I'm gonna stop talking now. I just nervous talk. Goodbye.
Thank you, Julie. Well said. Thank you. Anybody else?
She-Ra is so good. Have you watched She-Ra?
I have.
No, you have.
Anybody else? But
I think those characters are like queer. Like they're, mm-hmm. I don't get the vibe from watching it that they're like I think it's like a very queer show.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. There, and I do like that show because there is a lot of representation in that show. Sorry about that. With, you know, they have...
They are cartoons. So.
They are cartoons. But it's, and I guess it's a little easier to do it in a cartoon set. You're right. So you have, you know, the gay dads. It's a mixed couple in terms of interracial couple. There's, you know, a lesbian couple. There's a lot of representation going on in that show, which is really cool. And interesting, too, because, you know, this is a show that's supposedly for kids, you know, so it's introducing these different ideas to kids and how they're seeing it. There's another show called Pinky Malinky, and I don't know if you guys have seen that. I think it's pretty funny, but there's actually like a polyamorous couple that's raising a little boy in the show, and my kids watch it, and I think that part kind of like completely went over their heads when they saw it, but I was just like, huh, look at that. You know, there's three dads raising this little boy. So it was just kind of really interesting to get to see. But yeah, anybody else? Thoughts on the media? Jason, I know you have many thoughts.
I have many thoughts on the media. Most of them are negative, I'm afraid. I agree that they're very rarely what I would consider gay characters that are truly validating. I think, like she said, it's either focused on hypersexualized queer as folk characters, or it is the comedic sidekick to like a straight woman, or this over-the-top, vapid, obsessed with fashion. You know, like, it seems like most of the gay characters that we get are gay characters. Like, they're characters of the gay community, not actual characters. And so, you know, that bothers me, that I feel like the media tries to go up with the most palatable version of the gay community that it can come up with for America. I think it also bothers me, like you said, that a lot of times, like, you know, that, She-Ra wasn't the first animated, you know, lesbian couple or gay couple or queer couple. There's, you know, Korra, the Legend of Korra, at the end of that, she out of nowhere kind of does like a weird, like there's that little, like off sort of left field kind of, oh, I changed my mind. I'm really with this person and that. But again, it's often like the female. And I think that's because, you know, Hollywood feels like, and has always felt like that lesbian characters or female with female characters is way more acceptable and palatable to the American public. Like everyone's like, oh, two women together? Sure, that makes sense. That's okay. That's cool. Wait, two guys together?
It's the cisgender male fantasy, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really weird. I don't get that at all. But of course I wouldn't. But anyway. But I feel like that's, you know, sort of a palatable thing. But whenever you get gay characters, like even in She-Ra, like, okay, so I did watch She-Ra. My son and I watched She-Ra together. He's like a super huge She-Ra fanboy. He was so all about Catra and She-Ra hooking up, you know, being together. He was just waiting for the moment that would happen. And so that was all cool. And I appreciate that. But at the same time, like, okay, Bo's dad's being gay. Okay, it's cool. That's nice that it's in there. But they seem so stereotypical gay dad. Like, they're such cookie cutter, like, gay dads. Like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, I feel like every set of gay dads on television are from the same cookie cutter, like, mold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like they literally are just like, oh, here's Gay Dad 101, stamp. Gay Dad, like, and
you know,
and
when you say that, I hadn't thought about it, but they do remind me a lot of the couple on Modern Family.
Like, yeah.
If you look at them, there's a very similar pattern to it. I hadn't thought about it, but when you mentioned that, it does. I do see that.
And I think anytime there are gay dads in anything, whether it's a TV show or an animated show, or a gay male couple, usually they're relegated to either the background, a background situation, or again, it's that cookie cutter. Like, every gay dad in commercials looks the exact same. Every gay dad in a cartoon looks the same. Every gay dad in animation or in a regular show looks the same. So I think it's that, again, making the gay community, especially male-on-male gay community, like, being more palatable.
Pose is good. We forgot to talk about Pose. I mean, it's not nerdy, but it's a good show.
I haven't gotten around to that one yet. I mean, it's on my list, but I just haven't gotten around
also,
to it.
As far as, like, trash television, that is also quality. How do we feel about How to Get Away with Murder's representation of gay men?
I never watched that show.
I feel like character, Annalise Keating is, a power bottom for all.
Go ahead, Julie.
I was just going to say, I feel like there's so much, like, I haven't seen these shows that you guys are talking about. I'm, like, excited now, and I'm going to put them on my list. And then I was like, if there's one thing that I've learned from quarantine and social distancing, it's that I truly will never get to that list. Like, if I haven't done it now, I'm not going to see most of this stuff, but it is written down, so I'll add that.
Pose, okay, so Pose and...
Pose is good. How to Get Away with Murder is what it is, which is great television, but not, like... I mean, there's a lot of really good moments. For, like, a regular TV show, it's fantastic, but it is a drama that you're supposed to, like, binge-watch, you know?
I watched every single episode of The L Word, so I can watch not totally quality television. Like, I know I can do it.
Have you watched the new season, or the Generation Q?
I haven't. You have, Kyle?
No.
Yeah, it's, like, super sexualized.
I mean, that is just true, like, to porn, right?
Just like the original.
Yeah, it's just like softcore porn. For children who can't watch pornography.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I don't like a trash show. I will go back and watch Queer as Folk over and over again. But nowadays, when I watched it when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, this is exactly how I want the gay community to be. But now when I watch it, I'm like, oh good lord, anyone who watches this is going to be completely scarred. No wonder everyone's afraid of the gay community. This show is terrifying me. Like, Queer Folk was literally just, like, dialogue in between, like, weirdly directed gay sex scenes.
Yeah, I agree. Like, queer masculinity is definitely, like, underrepresented. I think.
Have you guys seen Work in Progress?
Mm-mm.
So Work in Progress is also a Showtime show, and it's about an AFAB person, so assigned female at birth person, who, like, also has OCD, and it's really interesting. Like, I mean, I think it's a good show, and it's not super clean cut. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great show, and then at the same time, I also think that it's a bit problematic in the sense that, like, representation of, like, an AFAB person who presents as masculine also has a mental health thing, and, like, I think it's, you know, so then I also think it's positive that of, like, representing that, like, people live with mental health concerns too, you know. And this person, well, her pronouns in this show are she dates a trans man, and so, like, so there's, like, some more, like, interesting representation in within this show, but there's still some, like, interesting not so great things about it too. But I think for me, like, the problem that I have with, like, television shows and, like, media as in social media and, like, traditional media is that when, like, things are so sexualized and when things are, like, so, like, don't know, when there's like the vilifying and the sullying of like our bodies or our identities, like it makes us more susceptible to like discrimination and violence, like because those things like help form and affirm the bias that people already have for folks in the LGBTQ community. And I also think that like when there's just like one typical representation of like, you know, gay male couples, you know, like, or, you know, or like lesbians or of like, you know, bi folks, or I think where that's really problematic is that it makes it seem like there's only one way to be a lesbian, that there's only one way to be gay, that there's only one way, and there's not just one way. There's so many ways to be whoever you are. And I think that like when people only see that there's only one way to do something, it like, and if you don't fit into that box, it's so detrimental. So I think there's a lot of work to be done on both of those ends of like people's bodies are their bodies and they're not just for other folks' fantasies,
right.
You know, and also like, you know, people should be able to name themselves and like say who they are, and not feel pressured to like be molded into something that, you know, is easily, you know,
digestible
to other folks.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. You know, we talk about representation, but I think the representation matters on screen, but also in that writer's room and in the producer's chair and in the director's chair. So, and until those things open up across the board, we're still going to have, you know, the white cisgendered male majority's view of what's okay, like Jason was saying, what's palatable and digestible for, they determine what's palatable and digestible for the masses, right? And so we just kind of have to figure out how do we, you know, push ourselves into those spaces, right? Across the board, again, LGBT, Black, Brown, you know, Native, whatever, we have to push ourselves into those spaces so that we can make sure that we're being represented in the way in which we want to be represented and in a way that makes, that's realistic, right? You know, one of the things that I've really learned over the last couple of years working with youth on the autism spectrum is that, like, like everybody's on a spectrum, right? You know, LGBT spectrum, Black people are on a spectrum. Black people aren't one thing or the other. You know, we're not Cosby and we're not drug dealers, you know. There's a lot of space in between where we can, you know, fill in those gaps. I meant Huxtable Cosby, not in jail Cosby.
Like, that's a shitty spectrum.
Huxtable, sorry. I thought about it as I was saying it. I was like, oh, that's coming up all wrong. He's on the same end of the spectrum. But anyway. But as I was saying, I was making a good point. Dang it. Anyway, we're all on a spectrum, right? And so, you know, trying to pigeonhole anybody into a box is detrimental to us as a society. Not just that person, but it's to us as a society. Trying to pigeonhole people into what makes sense for you doesn't make sense, because the world is not going to make sense to you if you do that. Right, the world is going to be a chaotic place for you because people are not going to conform to what you want them to conform to, and then we see the violence, and then we see, you know, the disrespect, and then we see everything that we're seeing now. People are fighting against all of those things, and so that was part of the reason I wanted to bring you guys on, just to kind of talk through a lot of this. You guys, again, have been a big part of my education about the LGBTQ plus community over the years, and I greatly appreciate all of you guys and the friendships that we've built. And will hopefully continue on into the future. Any last thoughts as before we sign off? Anyone? Bueller?
I'm just going to say fuck the police. Is that, I just feel like we're saying that to by and by now.
Jason, you had anything you wanted to add, sir? Are you even paying attention? Are you playing your Switch?
I am not, thank you very much. Although I do have probably a lot of work to do tonight on my island before I can go to sleep for Animal Crossing. There's always work to be done. That whole community would fall apart without me.
Oh, I need you.
Any final thoughts? Good sir.
Patient of a man and his Switch and his son.
I think what you said earlier kind of brings it all together, like, or somebody said earlier, I'm not sure who, like, I'm probably paraphrasing this really poorly, really badly, but I think Martin Luther King Jr. Was the one who said that as long as one group or one person isn't free, then no one is free, or something along those lines. And I think that's where we're at. Like, I think, you know, as long as one community doesn't feel safe, or one community is being restricted, or one community is being separated, then no one is truly, truly in a good space. And I think we all have to come to some kind of, even within those groups, like, you know, the African American community and the Hispanic community have long had a very tenuous relationship, especially with the gay community. But that shouldn't be a thing. Like, African Americans should be able to go, wow, it really sucks to be put down. It really sucks to be put, like, disparaged and to be threatened. We shouldn't be doing that to another community. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes for the gay community too. The gay community, I think, has struggled with trying to figure out how transgender people fit into the gay community, and how, for some reason, it feels like sometimes that gays and lesbians are natural enemies in the wild, and I'm not sure why that is, but that vibe is there sometimes. And so we're not even competing for the same thing. So I don't even know why, like, the same resources. So I don't know why there's hostility. But there seems to be, you know, like, there's always some community, even the communities who have felt oppression still struggle sometimes with not oppressing other communities. And that definitely should, like, you know, sure, we all want to point to white straight people, like white straight males, and be like, oh, they're the great Satan. But at the same time, that's still happening even within the communities who are being oppressed. And I don't think we can point the finger just at that one group and say, okay, you're the reason why everything is bad. I think we all play a part in the reason why everything is bad, like, not just one group or another. And so until we all figure that out and everyone starts to see people as people, then we can figure that out.
How much time have we got, Craig?
that was my I was gonna just say a funny jab. It's not funny, but it's funny. But it kind of is their fault.
Oh, thank God. I was sitting here like, okay, but aren't they, like, a little bit worse? Like,
yeah. But I think your point is, like, it's not just, like, people. It's a power structure, and it's a white supremacist, heteropatriarchal power structure. Right. It literally is. I know it sounds like feminist bullshit, but it is the truth, and that's why those things happen. Like,
yeah.
Communities of color will do policing of sexuality and gender expression in their own communities as a reaction to living under that system. And that is, you know, a product of colonization and of, I can't, like, summarize it all that well, but it does come in the end to, like, what that power structure is. And it's really oppressed communities in some situations may have power over each other, but not really. Like, we're not what the problem is. What do we have to hold over each other? Like, what the power structure is, what's keeping people, is what we're up against. And I think we do have to recognize that that is a white supremacist and heteropatriarchal power structure.
Yeah, I think that's super important, but I think we also, like, we just have to be accountable for the fact, like, every time any one person holds that proximity to whatever element of that power structure that they're embodying at that moment and uses that to their advantage, like, mm-hmm. in that moment, we're complicit in that system. So that's we have to continuously recognize that, and thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just, you know, nobody is guilt-free in this, and it's not necessarily about who's guilty, but it's more about overturning that system. Mm-hmm. So we all have a role in that, I guess.
Yeah. If we don't fuck up the system, me thinking you're a person kind of doesn't matter because you still don't have rights. Like, it doesn't matter how I feel about it. It matters whether or not you have power.
Mm-hmm.
I think like I would just say that, just going back to what you said earlier, Craig, just, you know, when you were explaining like just how each of us, like, yeah, like, you know, we all do have these also intersections of privilege, and, you know, being able to like not dismiss someone else's pain and someone else's oppression. And not just decide when we're just going to put it, you know, lay that down and like that it doesn't matter. And just, you know, really like understanding that when someone doesn't have what they need, like inevitably that means that like we lose what we need too. And so I think like I would just say that it's important to just be gentle, to each other, like, you know, even when we think about, you know, activism and advocacy, that doesn't look the same for everyone. The fact is that it can't look the same for everyone. You know, there are lots that contribute to like the ways that we behave, and activism is behavior. And so when we think about like personality and you know, just environmental factors and just so many different things, like just trying to take into consideration like all that folks are juggling with and dealing with, and trying to like hold them up, because if we hold them up, like we're also like giving something like to ourselves too. So I would just say like, yeah. Happy Pride, be gentle with each other. Cherie said something very important earlier that I agree with very much, but yeah.
No, I'll leave us hanging like that.
Sorry, right. That's the police, right? That was, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the guess.
I was setting you up, and you didn't.
I thought you were going to say it.
You missed it, man.
You like on three, like hands in.
Thank you guys so much for joining me. I really have appreciated this. I really have enjoyed this quite a bit. I feel like I've learned a lot from you all, and I plan on continuing to learn from you all over the next rest of my lifetime. And thank you guys out there for joining us and taking the time to listen. And hopefully you learned something as well. Please, you know, like, share, leave a comment on Facebook or Instagram about what you think, or your own thoughts. So thank you again for joining us on Craig and them today.